We're in the last mitzvah in Sefer Shmos, which is mitzvah Kuf Yodalad, the only mitzvah in Parashas Vayakel. Mitzvah Kuf Yodalad. Shel Yasu Bezdin Mishpat Mavis B'Shavis. Are you right there? Got it. That the Bezdin should not execute the death penalty on Shabbos. Vayakel Moshe Yitva Mitzvah Zlosa Se'achas. The Parashas Vayakel has only one negative commandment. Vishalu Yasu Adayonim Dinim B'Shavis. That the judges should not do the, should not have a, render their verdict on Shabbos and execute the punishment. Kilomar, Shemishin is chayev misa bevezdin lo yemisuhu b'Shabbos. That somebody who is liable for the death penalty, they should not put him to death on Shabbos. Shenemar, lo sevaruish b'chol milshvaseichem b'yom haShabbos. You shall not burn fire in all your dwelling places on the day of Shabbos. Obviously, that doesn't seem to be the simple understanding of the pasuk. The simple understanding is it's talking about kindling a fire. Chazal have a tradition that this is specifically referring to the death penalty by Sreifa. That's what the Chesif Rechinach is about to say. Perush alav bezeh, shel yisrafu bezdin b'shabes mishnes chayev Sreifa. The bezdin should not administer the penalty of burning to death one who's liable for such a death penalty on Shabbos. Vadin l'shar misos. And based on that, we assume that this is the same for all the other types of death penalty, that there's a specific prohibition against administering these death penalties on Shabbos. We have to darshan this out because this is really unnecessary. The Torah said already, don't do any malacha. And any burning is already a malacha that's forbidden on Shabbos. This is trying to tell you something independently. That it's not only there's an additional prohibition in addition to the general prohibition of lighting fires on Shabbos. There is an additional level of prohibition that you're not allowed to administer the penalty on Shabbos. The halachic medrash on Sefer Shmos says lo sevaru eish sreifa bichlal haisa v'yotzas l'lamed. So, why burning something on Shabbos is a general prohibition of Shabbos? It was included in the rest of them. So, why is there a specific verse that addresses the prohibition of burning? So, just as burning is special, that is one of the methods by which the Bezdin puts someone to death, and it does not supersede Shabbos. So, let's say you might assume that if somebody, you could imagine that this would be Docha Shabbos, that just like you and you have an emergency type of thing, like you have to have a bris milah circumcision on the eighth day, so that sets aside Shabbos. You perform the milah, even though technically that should be forbidden on Shabbos also. So I think that as soon as you realize that somebody is liable for the death penalty of burning, you don't wait around. You got to get rid of them. So you should administer the death penalty on Shabbos even, because it's an immediate type of thing. So that's not true. So the verse is teaching you that it's not true. That even if the person, you only realize shortly, either on Shabbos or shortly before Shabbos, that the person is liable for the death penalty, then you do not administer the death penalty of burning on Shabbos at all. So the rest of the types of death penalties do not supersede Shabbos. So in addition to this, that there's an additional prohibition on Shabbos of putting someone to death in addition to the regular violation of malacha that you have. There's another thing that we learn out of it. Havar lechalik yatzas. That, so there's a machlokes in the Gemara, whether the verse, this verse, lo sevaroish b'chol mosh v'seichem yom ha-shabbos, don't burn fire in all your dwelling places on the Sabbath day, whether this is telling you, there's one opinion that this is telling you, that you're actually not liable for the death penalty of normal Shabbos violation if you light a fire on Shabbos. You're only liable for a regular negative commandment. In other words, the punishment you would receive would not be stoning. It would be lashes, which is the normal punishment for violating a negative commandment. So that's one opinion that says Havara l'lav yatzas. Havara, that lighting a fire, the reason that the Torah mentions it explicitly, and it because even though it was already included in the general command of observing Shabbos, is because that's the one malacha that is only subject to a lav, a simple negative commandment, and not to a commandment that's liable for the death penalty. But this is the real way we go. Havara lechalik yatzas, that the reason that the Torah singled out Havara that kindling a fire and then didn't just leave it with the rest of the its friends, the group of all Sabbath prohibitions. That kilomar she'osa b'Shabbos harbe avos melachos b'vasachas behelem echad she'yia chayev chatas o komlocha melacha b'fnei atzma. Normally, we have a principle that if you didn't really realize what you were doing and you violated a few commandments, and you violated something, you violated something a few times. Let's say there is a prohibition of, nida. Nida is a chayef karis. If you violate the prohibition of nida, you're subject to a spiritual excision of karis. So let's say you didn't realize. So if if you do it on purpose. But if there's a prohibition that's liable to karis, then and you do it by accident, either you didn't know that it was for, you knew exactly what you were doing, you just didn't know that it was that it was forbidden, or you didn't know exactly what was going on, so you didn't know it was Shabbos, or you didn't know your wife was Anita. Then if you let's say you had relations multiple times with her while she was Anita, and you in the same period of not realizing that she was Anita, then you would only be chayev achatos once. Because normally you have to bring, you have to bring a chatas, you have to bring a special korban called a chatas. If you violate an avera, for which you'd be liable for kares, but not on purpose. If you do it on purpose, you're chayav kares, but if you do it not on purpose, like I said, you didn't know it was forbidden, or you didn't know exactly that it was the wrong time, then you would be chayav a chatas. So in that case, even if you did the avera multiple times, like I said, you had relations multiple times, and you didn't realize she was Anita, or you didn't realize that there was such a prohibition as Nida, then you would only have to bring one chatas. But let's say you realized what was going on, then you're only liable for one chatas. Then if you do it again, that by accident, then you're liable for two chatos. It has to be, even if you do the avera multiple times, it has to be with one time of the mindset that you don't know exactly what was going on, the situation exactly. So you might think that the same was true on Shabbos. So let's say you didn't know what malacha was usur, and you were doing all these types of things on Shabbos. You were doing malacha after malacha after malacha. You carried in Rishus Harabim, and you stripped the skin off an animal, and then you wove some threads on a loom. Then even though you did, since it was all at one time that you didn't realize exactly what was going on, then you might think you should only have to bring one chatas. But no, really, since the Torah, that we have this principle of havara lechalik yatzas, that since the Torah mentioned havara specifically, this singled out this one malacha as being forbidden. It wasn't specifically to tell you anything about this malacha per se. The fact that it singled out this one malacha tells you that each malacha has a chashivas, has an independent importance and identity of its own. So, in that case, if you did those three malachos on Shabbos, even if it was, we call, behelem echad, with one period of not realizing exactly what was going on, then you're liable to bring three korban chatas, or however many malachos you did, however many different labors you did, even though in other types of karis prohibitions, if you did it behelem echad, you would only be liable to bring one chatas. Uvegimara divnei ma'arava, in the Talmud Yerushalmi amru b'chol mel shvoseichem, Rabbi Ela b'shem Rabbi Yanai mikan levat edinim shelo yihu dan in Rishabbos. And we also learn out on from the Yerushalmi that b'chol mel shvoseichem, since it says b'chol mel shvoseichem, osvaris b'chol mel shvoseichem, somehow Chazal have a tradition over here that this means that the Beis Din should not judge on Shabbos. And the Doraisa prohibition, as we've seen, is administering the death penalty. But there is a Derabanan prohibition that a Beis Din should not conduct proceedings on Shabbos at all, even a monetary proceeding. The Beis Din is not really supposed to get paid, no. But you are allowed to do is, certainly nowadays they get paid, because otherwise no one would consent to be on a Beis Din. So what you do is technically you're supposed to be under the parameters of what's called schar batala, that you're not paying them for their services, you're paying for them for the time, that they could be doing other things, and instead they're helping you with your court case. So you have to do schar, it has to fall under the rubric of schar batala. of course, it's of the utmost importance that the litigants share the Beis Din costs exactly. Of course, they have to share the Beis Din costs 100% equally, otherwise that would be a serious problem of shochad, of bribery, and obviously the people are going to be, the dayanim are going to be more inclined to paskin in favor of the people who are paying more. So as long as it falls under the rubric of schar batala, and the costs are shared exactly equally, then it's okay. They can take money. There is an additional, this falls under the parameter of, officially it's a gzera shema yichtov, the Chazal instituted a prohibition for the judges, the court, to sit and hear cases on Shabbos, even if there's no punishment, or it's really not a death penalty necessarily going to be involved, it's just a civil case, monetary case. Officially, it falls under the rubric of maybe you'll write, but it's not a Shabbos dika thing. That sometimes, a lot of times, Chazal had more than one reason. When they might tell you one reason for instituting a prohibition, but they may have had a lot of other reasons up their sleeve that they didn't necessarily express explicitly. So it's certainly not a Shabbos dika thing. You can imagine for courts to be running on Shabbos. You write stuff. The same reason you're not allowed to, for example, get married on Shabbos. It's another, it's part of this whole series of gzeiros. Mishorshei ha-mitzvah, the reasoning for this mitzvah is as follows. Sheratza Hashem Yizbarach lechabed hayom hazeh, sheimtzu bo menucha hakol gam hachotim v'hachayovim. The reasoning behind this mitzvah is that God wants everyone to rest on Shabbos, even if you're not the greatest person. Even if you are liable to the death penalty, God wants you to have a nice and restful Shabbos. So you shouldn't get killed on that day. Mashal lemelech gadol shekara b'nei ha-medina yom echa l'suda she'ena moneha pesach mikol adam. It's similar to if a great king called all of his subjects to a nice meal, and he said he's not going to prevent anyone from entering the nice meal. B'achar yom ha-suda yaseh mishpat. And after the day of feasting, he's going to have all his, he's going to hold court, and he's going to try people and administer punishments. Kena dav razeh. God commanded us to keep Shabbos for our good and for our merit. We discussed, of course, before the prohibitions of Shabbos. It's part of the honor of the day not to administer any punishments of this order on Shabbos. It's not Shabbosic, but it's a deraisa of being not Shabbosic. Normally, assume not Shabbosic is a more... It's not only midrabanan. It's not even a. It's sort of an more of an amorphous type of thing that something's not Shabbostic. You just have to have a feel for it. But here, this is a derisive expression of something not being Shabbostic, according to the Sefer Chinuch. Venoheges mitzvah zo bizman habayis bizcharim. Venoheges mitzvah zo bizman habayis. Bizcharim shem balei hamishpat v'chayovim lizar b'leval yasudin b'shabbos. I don't know why it's shehem balei hamishpat v'chayovim lizar b'leval yasudin b'shabbos. So it's the males who can be a judge, and they're going to administer the capital offenses and punishments, and therefore that is they who are subject to this prohibition. Im avru v'tzivu lisros b'riyah b'shabbos avru al lavzeh. So here is really the answer to Mrs. Hirsch's question, which is that even if the Beis Din themselves don't violate a technical Shabbos prohibition, in other words, they're not the ones actually performing the Sreifa or any of the death penalties on Shabbos, yet they tell to the executioners, they say to the executioners, this guy is, we have finished judging him and we found him guilty, and our verdict is that he gets the death penalty of burning, go out and administer the death penalty. So that also, even though they wouldn't be chayav skila for that, because they didn't perform any action that's technically prohibited on Shabbos in the terms of malacha, in terms of labor, still they have violated this deraisa. They violated the deraisa of administering the death penalty on Shabbos because they told the executioner, they told someone else to administer the death penalty. Vein lokin alav im lo asu bo maisa. You don't receive lashes because this is not a lot. It's a lav shein bo maisa. You didn't actually perform the action. You just told them to do it. Vein asu bo maisa. But if the dayanim, the judges, actually administer the death penalty, konchis rafu heim bidehem, imesh edim asra niskalim. Again, if they have the proper circumstances, witnesses, and a warning, they receive the death penalty of stoning because they violated Shabbos. Not because of this, the violation of this per se, but because they violate a Shabbos, they performed the malacha on Shabbos. The violation of this din that we're learning now, mitzvah kuf yod aleph, is not skila. That's only for violating an actual prohibition of labor on Shabbos. So it's they don't. In other words, in theory, they would get malchus for violating this mitzvah of not administering the death penalty on Shabbos. But mima nafshach. In other words, any way you look at it, either they told someone else to do it, in which case they wouldn't get malchus because it's a lav shein b'maisa, because there's no action associated with it. Or if they did it themselves, then they're going to get stoning because they violated a technical malacha on Shabbos. There's no situation where the dayanim, the judges, would receive the penalty of lashes for the violation of this mitzvah, even though technically such a thing should apply. B'shogei mivim chatos l'chapara, and if they thought that it was mutter, they thought that they're supposed to administer the death penalty whenever it comes out that this person is liable for the death penalty, even if that happens to be Shabbos. If they thought that was the case, yeah, but if somehow they made a mistake and they did it, so they bring a chatos just like for any other violation of Shabbos, the raisa, you bring a chatos. Okay, parsha seila pekudei ein b'mitzvah. The next parsha has no mitzvah, so therefore nishlam sefer ve'ila shmos. This is the end of sefer shmos. Be'ezras nosen koach v'satzumos tila liyotzer neshamos achel sefer vayikra b'siyua rav v'nora. Now he knows this nice poetic thing about how he finished the book of shmos, and he's going to begin the book of vayikra. So if anybody could open up the book of vayikra. Then, consider it. We'll retroactively have the CM from last week now. So everybody should just imagine eating the all the food, the stuff that we have brought in. So we finished Sefer Shmotz. We are now beginning Sefer Vayikra. Parshas Vayikra. Parshas Vayikra has Yesh ba achas esrei mitzvos asei. It has 11 positive commandments, v'chamesh mitzvos lo asei, and 5 negative commandments. Mitzvah Kuf Tezvav, the 115th mitzvah. Mitzvahs Maise Ha'ola, the mitzvah of a burnt offering. How to administer the worship of a burnt offering. Lasos Ola Kimishbata, to perform the burnt offering in accordance with its proper way of doing it. Shenemar Im Ola Korbano, the Torah describes in detail how to perform the Ola. The reasoning for this mitzvah is not an independent reason per se, but it's just a part of Mashikasafti b'mitzvah sabayis alin hakarbono seder v'kuli. Remember when we had that whole, the longest mitzvah of probably Torah, the whole digression about, poetic digression about building the Beis HaMikdash and how important it is and all the reasoning behind all the karbonos, and now it's a representation of our feelings, and doing an action is going to lead you to behave better. So the Ola doesn't have any independent reasoning, it's just a din, a part of the general rules about the karbanos. Midinei ha-mitzvah, the halachos of the mitzvah are as follows. Ma'asha'amru zichrona lebracha, ma'asha Ola shayisa nasis kain. It was done as follows. Shochtin es ha-behema bazara, they slaughter the animal in the courtyard of the temple. Ve'ashchita kesher afilu bazarim, it doesn't need to be a kohen who shechts the animal. It could be any Jewish person who shechts the animal. Umikabeles adam ve'elach mitzvahs kuna. The real avoda of the priest starts when you receive the blood from the animal as it's draining from the shechita, which you're going to sprinkle on the altar. Vizorik kohen adam, and the kohen sprinkles the blood on the altar. Umavshit osa, and the kohen strips the animal of its skin, skins the animal. Umenatcha ivarim shleimim, and he cuts the animal up into big pieces, not little pieces. D'chsiv l'insacheha, it says he shall cut it up into pieces. So it has to be, you know, you bit the animal into big sections. You don't cut. You're right. You don't like cut the animal into steaks. You just cut it into quarters or something. And when you're cutting up the offering, then you take out the sciatic nerve. We know the sciatic nerve is not looked upon so kindly in Judaism. So you take that out of the thigh. Then you put all the sections of the animal on top of the altar and let it burn. Because this is the ola, it's a burnt offering, as opposed to many other offerings where the kohanim eat some of it. Or sometimes the in other offerings, the owners of the animal, the person who's bringing the offering, eats some of it. The ola is a sacrifice that is brought and completely consumed on the altar. And the Minchas Chinuch points out, by the way, that he doesn't understand why the Chinuch says that he takes out the Gid Hanosha, the sciatic nerve, while he's cutting it up. The Minchas says it's just not true. He takes, because the thigh is supposed to go up onto the altar while it's whole, because it's inappropriate to, like, bring God, like, a thigh with, like, ripped out, with a nerve ripped out of it. It doesn't look so nice. So the Minchas Chinuch says that that's not true. That was done after the thing was brought up to the altar already. Then they would slide out the Gid Hanasha, they would slide out the sciatic nerve, and then place the thigh on top of the pyre on the Mizbeach. V'tzemer shebarosh ha'kvasim v'seir shebizkan ha'tyashim. And but what about the we put all the body parts on the altar. So what do we do with the wool that is on the heads of the lambs and the beards? You know, goats have beards. So if you have a goat, what if you have the beard of the goat? And the bones and the sinews and the horns and the hooves. When they're still attached to the main part of the body, then you put everything on the altar. That the Kohen has to offer up everything, every part of the animal on the altar that's still attached at least. But let's say some of the hair fell off, or let's say a hoof fell off, then you don't put the hoof on the altar independently, you just leave it off. You shall do your burnt offerings, the flesh and the blood. But if it's neither flesh nor blood, so it does not it should not be placed independently on the altar. Rather, if it's still attached, so you leave it on. You don't have to take it off. But if it's somehow no longer attached, then you don't have to. Then you shouldn't put that on the altar independently. V'seder anituach keitzahaya, exactly how they used to cut up the animal into the parts. V'adochas b'nei hameayim keitzad, and how they used to wash the intestines, because the intestines are the quickest part of the animal to spoil. That's why in America you can't find real kishka. In other words, intestines stuffed with... Do you have it when you were growing up? But since they spoil the most quickly, so that's why the USDA apparently is not so hot on Jewish companies, which are the only people who would really be interested in. Although you never know, some people are interesting on exotic food. Whatever, but they're not so hot on making real kishka, and you won't really find real intestines for sale in the store. Even that if you want to stuff it yourself, you would have to. So those have to be washed before they're put on the altar, because otherwise it's a little gross, and the stomach is washed several times, because the stomach has the most... We were discussing last time about using the milk that's in the stomach of the animal to curdle cheese. So it has a lot... You'll find more actual stuff in the stomach of the animal than you will in the intestines per se, so that's why the stomach has to be washed even more thoroughly than the intestines. Uvechama b'nei adam molichin es ha'ivarim la'mizbeach. So how many people carry the animal from the courtyard up onto the altar? Shamar zichronim levracha ki ha'keves b'shisha. So if it's a lamb, then six people carry it. V'ashor b'arba v'esrim, and if it's an ox, then 24. And if it's an individual burnt offering, then fewer. But sometimes an ola can be brought from birds. So that has a completely different procedure. That's when the Kohen takes the bird, the whole bird, up to the altar and performs a procedure called malika, which is where you have the Kohen had a specially sharpened long fingernail. And you would stick it into the back of the bird's neck. And for the ola, he has to break both the esophagus and the trachea completely. And that is how a burnt offering is brought when it's, and then put it on the altar. And that is how it's done with a bird. V'yeser pratea, and the rest of the details, b'var mizvachim. Obviously, it's the most likely place where you find the halachos or in the tractate zvachim. The tractate dealing with animal sacrifices. When Hegez Bismanas Bayez Bezichre Kehuna, the exact form for doing the Ola is in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, only in the males of the priesthood. The Kohen Shavar Velo Asake Seder Hazeh Bital Asayin. If the Kohen did it improperly, then he neglected to perform a positive commandment. And I'm sure we'll get into later in the Sefer Chinuch for what purposes one brings an Ola. It's generally for something. You can bring an Ola if you want atonement for something for which no other atonement is prescribed. So if you violate Shabbos on the Doraisa level or any association with Karis, we were discussing that you have to bring a Chatas, not an Ola. Chatas is a sin offering, an Ola is a burnt offering. But let's say you neglected to put on tefillin, or you neglected to perform another positive commandment, then you could bring an Ola, because an Ola, you can volunteer to bring an Ola whenever you want. So let's say you're feeling really bad that you neglected to form this positive commandment. The Torah doesn't prescribe any particular type of atonement for that, so an Ola is a nice choice if you want if you want to volunteer for your own atonement for yourself. Okay, Mitzvah Kuf Tezayin, the next Mitzvah is 116. It's more vegetarian friendly. And it's the mitzvah's korban mincha. It's the mitzvah of a sacrifice that is made of flour and not of animals. Lasos meleches ha-mincha la-inyan ha-nizkar ba-torah be-parshiyoseha. To do the korban mincha the way the Torah prescribes you to do it. Shenemar benefesh ki sakriv korban mincha, a person who offers a korban mincha, uchsiv v'mincha ha-machvas. It says, what if the mincha is on a pan? It's a different type of pan. Different types of menachos go in different types of pans. Binyan ha-menachos, what's a mincha? Plural menachos. Hu korban haba mimine ha-kemochim velo mi-balechaim. It comes from flour and not from animals. Uchvar kasavti lamala, I wrote when I was going on my whole poetic tangent about how what the korbanos are for. It gets your kishkis more when you see an animal being sacrificed than when you see flour being sacrificed. To subjugate and to lower your soul that is having desire for things that are not supposed to do, and that sins. So you see that something that is alive, just like you're alive, it just doesn't have the seichel. A human being has seichel, an animal doesn't have seichel. When it's being sacrificed, then it impacts you more. So too, when you sin, you lower yourself to the level of an animal. You get rid of your seichel. If you really use your seichel properly, if you always acted intellectually and did what you know is right instead of what pulls you to do a sin that you might have a animalistic desire for. So when you lower it to yourself to the level of the animal, so an animal is going to be burnt on your behalf on the altar, and you can imagine yourself, you are that animal. When you lower yourself to that level, you are that animal that's being burnt. That sins only come when people are lower themselves to an animalistic level. Be'akorban b'mashehu she'eino ba'al chayim. When a korban is not an animal, but rather a flower, not a flower, but flower. Afal pishu ba gam kein lahachnos hayitzer. This also comes to subjugate your evil inclination. She'ira ha'adam ki b'shvil cheto nistarech lisrof mamonu l'chaloso. That people will see that it's not quite as powerful a message, but you see that you are paying money, good money for this flower. You could have used this flower to bake a delicious challah. But instead of using it to bake a delicious challah, it's going to not waste. I wouldn't say waste, but it's going to. You're not even getting a chance to use it. It's destroying your money on the altar. Okay, it's a little bit more stretched. By an animal, seeing the animal being burnt on the altar is a little bit more. It's a stronger message. But the flower is also not to be taken lightly. Umin adome lefi apshat. And what it seems to me, according to the simple understanding, is ki al kein yikari mincha. That's why the korban of flour is called the korban mincha. Mipnei she'inyana me'at, mikorban ba'al chayim, kemoshe minchos ben yadam, yihu b'muad b'rov ha'pa'amim. It's because it's less valuable than an animal. So just like you give, a mincha means a present. So when you give someone a present, you normally don't give something that has the value of a whole cow or a whole lamb. You give something of just a token. So mincha here, one interpretation is that mincha means it's a token to God as opposed to a real sacrifice. Also, many types of menachos come as a voluntary offering. And if it's not obligatory, if you just offer it as a present of your own volition, that's also another reason why the flower offerings are called a mincha. That's why tefillas mincha maybe also might be called mincha, because what, nothing to, it's short. It's short and concise, and it's a sacrifice.
Different.
These are all the types of menachos. Everything you want to know about menachos, but we're afraid to ask. In other words, what do I mean by this? It comes independently. And not as some korbanos, some animal sacrifices require a mincha as a, what's the word I'm looking for, like a corollary or a secondary, not a corollary, it's like a law, but it's a secondary, ancillary part of the korban is to bring a mincha in addition to it. But here we're talking about the menachos that come independently, not in connection with an animal sacrifice. Rotzalomar bigreiras korbanacher, meaning not with that comes in tandem with another korban. Shalosh menachos ein shein baos bishul kol atzibor. There are three types of menachos that are offered on behalf of the entire Jewish people. Vehin omer ba Pesach, the korban haomer, which is during Passover, which is when they used to, the day after the first day of Pesach, they used to cut the barley from the new crop. They used to cut barley, and they used to offer that on the altar, and that was a special korban, which is done on Pesach. Okay, so the Omer of Pesach had also had a very special function, which is that it permitted one to consume the new crop of grain for that year. The new crop of grain for that year was considered to be prohibited. It's called Chadash, the new grain. Until the Omer is offered on Pesach. And that serves to permit any grain that had taken root since the last Omer was offered until the Omer is being offered right now, any grain that took root is now permissible. Okay, that's an excellent question. So there's a machlokes tanoim. Whether the divis, but in the Mishnah itself, in the last perek in Kiddushin, the last perek in Kiddushin presents a machlokes tanoim, a difference of agreement between the sages of the Mishnah, as to whether the rule of chadash, that you're not allowed to eat the new grain until the omer is offered, or when we don't have a beis hamikdash anymore, till that period of time passed in which the omer could have been offered. Right, that whole day passed, right? So, it's a machlokes tanoim as to whether this prohibition of eating the new grain applies outside of the land of Israel as well. Normally, we have a principle that a land-based mitzvah is only applicable in the land of Israel itself. So, for example, the Trumas and Maaser, separating the tithes and the Shemitah year, is only applicable in the land of Israel. But interestingly enough, although it's a machlokes in the land in the Mishnah at the end of Kiddushin, the Mishnah at the end of Orla, Maseches Orla, presents only the opinion that the chadash in the outside the land of Israel is prohibited, that the prohibition of chadash does apply outside the land of Israel as well. Okay. So all the poskim say, pretty much. And that's what also it says in the Gemara Menaches. It discusses this a little bit. And it's a machlokas amoraim over there, whether none of them said chadash outside of Israel was permitted, like that opinion that's quoted in the end of the Mishnah and Kiddushin, but it's a machlokas over there, whether chadash is prohibited, midarais or midarabanan. And it sounds like from the Mishnah in Orla that it's prohibited midaraisa. And that is, in fact, based on the fact that the Mishnah says this without qualification, pretty much all the poskim rule that chadash outside of Israel is prohibited midaraisa, just like in the land of Israel as well. The Rif, the Rambam, the Rosh, the Shulchan Aruch, they all hold that Chadash is prohibited outside the land of Israel, Midaraisa. Yeah. So, we have a little bit of an issue, which is that many sections of the Jewish people were not concerned about this prohibition. They were not careful about eating only Yashan, grain that had taken root prior to the preceding Pesach. So the poskim bring various methods to justify this, and none of them are so glatt, is the truth. None of them are so... even in Yemen, actually, where you would assume that they would follow the Rambam and everything, in Yemen, they were also, because the growing season didn't work out with this. The growing season worked out in a way that would have been extremely difficult to keep the laws of Chadash and Yashan. There was only a select minority in Yemen of extra pious people who kept Yashan. Also, in amongst Ashkenazim, also, there was always a stream of people who did keep Yashan. For example, the Vilna Gaon was known to be extremely... is paskin extremely strongly that no, we paskin that Chodesh outside of the land of Israel is prohibited midaraisa. There's no way out, so you have to be careful about that. And there's no two ways about it. Basically, the way they justify it, the fact that a lot of people outside the land of Israel were not careful about it, is one of two ways. There's the opinion of the Bach, that the Bach, which is one of the commentaries on the Torah, holds that it is indeed applicable outside the land of Israel, but only if it's the Jewish field in which the grain is growing. If the field is not owned by a Jew, then it does not apply. However, most poskim bring that this is certainly not the consensus of. It's extremely difficult to rely on this opinion. The most reasonable defense of this is the opinion of the Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan writes that he doesn't think that that the Bach is correct at all. He thinks that what we're relying on are two Rishonim. There is one Rishon who is known as the Or Zeruah. The Or Zeruah holds that Chodosh outside the land of Israel is only prohibited midrabanan. He paskins like that opinion.
It's still prohibited.
Right. It's still prohibited, but if there's a suffix, if you're not sure whether it's Chodosh or Yashan, then you'd be allowed to eat it due to the principle of suffix derabanan lakula. When there's a rabbinical prohibition involved, then you're allowed to, if you have a situation of doubt, then you're allowed to treat the doubt, resolve the doubt in a lenient manner. So therefore, according to the Or Zeruah, so if you have a suffix, you don't, most things you nowadays are not Vadai Chodosh. It would be prohibited. It would be okay because if the prohibition is only midrabanan, then you're allowed to go leniently. There's also he also cites the opinion of the Sefer HaTruma, which is another Rishon who holds that yes, Chodosh outside the land of Israel is only the Rabbanan, and he goes even further. He says that there are many other prohibitions like Shemitah and whatever, and Trumas and Maisrus and the tithes, where Chazal did establish the prohibition outside the land of Israel, but they limited it to the lands that were immediately surrounding Israel, because you might get confused with Israel itself. But far away, in Europe and in America and Australia and all these places, so there is absolutely no prohibition of Chadash whatsoever. So that's the way the Aruch HaShulchan, based on those two opinions, which is much more reasonable than the Bach, based on those two prohibitions, he explains how in many places outside the land of Israel they were in fact lenient and continue to be lenient about the prohibition of Chodesh outside the land of Israel. If you wanted to be careful about the prohibition of Chodesh and you wanted to buy only Yashan, you see sometimes on packages it says Nasa Mikemach Yashan, then you would have to have a hashgacha on the bakery to make sure they used only wheat that was. Or sometimes you have to do your research. A, you could buy it. Well, what some people do is they buy a lot of stuff, you know, during the summer where it's right after Pesach, so everything is yashan because there's no new grain yet. Either you freeze it or it's not perishable. The chadash starts becoming more, as farther away you get from Pesach, the more likely there is for new grain that was planted after Pesach to be. I mean, you have to research the agricultural practices.
In a particular country.
Yeah. So there is a man by the name of Yosef Herman who publishes a guide. He publishes a guide every year when it starts around Rosh Hashanah time. He publishes a guide saying which products are made with grain that is for sure Yashan, that is made with that was planted in the winter, so it's Pesach has passed since the grain was planted. So a lot of products happen to be made with winter wheat because that's the type of wheat that's good for that product. Uh-huh. Normally, cakes and stuff like that are made with winter wheat, and the problem is usually only with like springy things like pizza. That's the general rule, but you have to research the individual grain and the individual growing season and a lot of things. And he'll explain also how to tell based on the barcodes. not the barcodes, but the expiration date on the item, when that item was manufactured. He collects data from the manufacturers, and he will say, well, the expiration date is a year and a half after the item was manufactured. So if you take the expiration date, and you subtract a year and a half, then you'll know when that item was made. And if it was made in the summer, or if it was made before Pesach, certainly right before Pesach, then it's okay. And if it's not, then you might want to hold off. Might want to not buy that. So there is a chink in this whole thing.
Who's what? The one that permits it? You said Or Zeruah?
The Or Zeruah and the Sefer HaTruma and the Bach. Yeah.
The Bach, I understand.
But the truth is, the Shulchan Aruch and all the poskim really say it's Usur. And it's interesting to note, I gave a shir on this once about a year ago. And they said, I pointed out that poskim who say it's permitted, if they all say they're all searching for a heter. They're saying, you know, it seems like it should be Usur. Oh, so maybe we hold like this because it's Chas Hadchak, it's an emergency situation, we have to buy grain from the Goyim, so how can we justify this? Well, maybe we hold like this. So I pointed out that in the United States of America, it's not really a Chas Hadchak anymore. We have freezers, B, we have Jewish companies that have Hashgacha for Yashan. So it's somewhat questionable as to whether the Jewish community in America should be still relying on this. We should be, in my opinion, we should be, the Hashgachos and the Jewish company should be moving in a direction where we should make sure that everything is indeed Yashan.
If, let's say, Brent has an OU, would you say that they are not?
No, as far as I'm aware, there is no Hechsher in America that will not give a Hechsher to something that's Chadash. In Israel, everybody agrees that everything has to be Yashan, so that's not an issue. But anything has a reliable Israeli Hechsher, then it's going to be Yashan. Also in Europe, there are some Hechsherim that will only give a Hechsher to Yashan. But in America, there's no Hechsher that will only give a Hechsher to Yashan, yeah. There's no real community that, it's more of an individual thing. Yeah, it's interesting. It's not like Chol of Yisrael, where if you go to Lakewood or Borough Park, so everybody keeps Chol of Yisrael. It's not usually something like that. Usually it's...
You can't get any other milk.
Yeah, so it's not... It's not like that. So there are more. It is more of an individual type of thing. But I think
you mean it's not like
Hasidim are very lenient on this. You should know Hasidim are more lenient on Yashan than Misnagdim. That's more much. If someone's going to adopt this chumra, if you can call it a chumra, maybe it's not a chumra. If somebody it's more likely to be someone who's not Hasidish. There's some misora, some tradition from the Baal Shem Tov that. He liked the Bach, so he liked the Paskin like the Bach. So he said the story that he was once holding some beer that was made from Chadash barley. So somebody said to him, you know, Rebbe, that's Chadash. So he says, the Bach is a great rabbi. We can rely on him. And that's what he was Ashkenaz. The Sfardim were all stringent about this. All the Sfardi poskim were stringent about this because they all lived in countries where it wasn't an issue. In the Mediterranean area, so the growing season fits in very well with the season in Eretz Yisrael. It's not an issue at all. The only issue is really when you live in a place where the growing season doesn't quite correspond. But in any case, if you're going to pick...
Australia.
What? I don't know what the situation is in Australia, but if you're going to pick a Chumrah... Again, if you can call it Chumrah, so this is a good one. Some people, the Mishnah Berurah also says
it's a Chumrah.
I call it a Chumrah because it's something that is more stringent than you think you're being right now. But it's really Mikra Adin. Really, it is Mikra Adin. But the question is, so you have to adjust your Chumrah goggles. This is the din that it's Asur, and then so you have a Kula. We have a Kula we need to rely on. Well, we need to rely on it, but. It's not that the Ikar Adin is that it's Mutter and then it'd be a Chumrah to be Machmer. About certain issues, you have to adjust your perspective as to what's a Chumrah and what's a Kula. The Mishnah Berurah says that even if you can't be Machbet all the time, so let's say sometimes you get invited out to various places, so it's hard to be... It's hard to insist, you know, every time you get invited out, oh, by the way, here's the flour you can buy, and here's the barley you can buy, and here's the... So it's extremely difficult to do that. So the Mishnah Berurah says you should just, at the very least, you should try to be makbid as much as you can. So whenever you have control over what you're eating, then it's appropriate to be stringent and try to, as much as possible, to eat only yoshan.